Great. So we'll be doing the Bible reading now. Last week, we looked at the gospel account of Jesus' resurrection from the book of John. Today, we will read from Luke, which is another gospel account following the life of Jesus. So today's passage is Luke 8, verse 40 to 48. You can follow along on the screen, or you can get your Bibles out. Luke 8, 40 to 48. Now, when Jesus returned, a crowd welcomed him, for they were all expecting him. Then a man named Jairus, a synagogue leader, came and fell at Jesus' feet, pleading with him to come to his house because his only daughter, a girl of about 12, was dying. As Jesus was on his way, the crowds almost crushed him, and a woman was there who has been subjected to bleeding for 12 years, but no one could heal her. She came up behind him and touched the edge of his cloak, and immediately her bleeding stopped. "Who touched me?" Jesus asked. When they all denied it, Peter said, "Master, the people are crowding and pressing against you." But Jesus said, "Someone touched me. I know that the power has gone out from me." Then the woman, seeing that she could not go unnoticed, came trembling and fell at his feet. In the presence of all the people, she told why she had touched him and how she had been instantly healed. Then he said to her, "Daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace." This is the word of God. I'd like to invite Sam now to give his talk.
We used to believe it was okay to smoke, but we don't believe that anymore. We used to believe that OH&S was a waste of time, but we don't believe that anymore either. And then we used to believe women should not vote, but now we do. There's so many things that we used to believe were good that we now believe are bad, and so many things that we believe were bad that we now believe to be good. We always look back at previous generations and think, I can't believe you used to think that. I can't believe you used to believe that. I can't believe you used to do that. But that only means future generations are always going to do the same to us. They're going to look back at us and think how wrong, bad, and stupid we were. See, we all think we're amazing. We all think we're the first generation to get it right and everyone else got it wrong. But we're no different from those who come before us. So we too will find ourselves on the wrong side of history. Now, that's okay to be wrong about things like OH&S, but what if we're wrong about life itself? What if we're wrong about who we are, where we're going, and why we're here? So welcome again to Feb Talks. Every year we try to do a series which is relevant and catchy. This year our series is this: how can I be on the right side of history, living a life with no regrets? How can we know that what we believe is true, good and beautiful? And to answer that, we're going to look at the life and teachings of Jesus. Now we think, well, why would we pick Jesus? Well, right now, all over the world, millions of people in the majority non-Western world are choosing to love, follow and worship Jesus. So maybe it's time that we in the West forget about the Jesus we think we know, forget about the Jesus we grew up with, and let's rediscover the Jesus in the Bible and discover what the rest of the world is discovering. So in February, our topics will be this. We'll look at, how do I know if Jesus is true in week one? In week two, how do I know if Jesus is good? Week three, how do I know if Jesus is beautiful? And week four, how do I know if Jesus is for me? So today is week two, and our question is this: how do I know if Jesus is good? And this will come in the form of a 20-minute talk from me now, followed by question and answer from you guys. So as I'm speaking, think of whatever question you want to ask and text it to that number on the screen. So how do I know if Jesus is good? Well, we just heard a story from an eyewitness account in the Bible from the life of Jesus. Now, every year, now you've been coming, you know what happens in the Feb Talks. I love going through the internet to find a picture from the internet of what I think Jesus would look like if he was here today. So this year, for this series, I'm going with this picture because we know from the Bible, Jesus was not Anglo. He liked his eating and drinking, and it was very countercultural. But also, the Bible hints Jesus wasn't that good looking. So probably this guy's a bit too good looking to be Jesus. Now, in this story, we read that Jesus is on his way to a medical emergency. There's a 12-year-old girl dying, but he gets interrupted on the way because there's another woman with a different form of emergency. This woman has been bleeding on the inside for 12 long years. She's broken on the inside, but she's also broken on the outside. The system has failed her. And she fights her way through the crowd and she touches Jesus and she's instantly healed. But then Jesus stops and says, "Who touched me?" And he forces the woman to come out in public to describe what has happened to her. And then Jesus says, "Your faith has healed you. Go in peace." And Jesus publicly restores this woman, publicly vindicates this woman, and publicly honors this woman. So how do I know if Jesus is good from this story? Well, I'm going to begin here by setting the bar really low. What if we just say Jesus can't be good? Let's begin with this position. You know what? Jesus is not good. He can't be good. Let's go back to the story. As Jesus was on his way, the crowds almost crushed him. And a woman was there who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years, but no one could heal her. This woman is broken on the inside and the outside. We read elsewhere in the Bible that she has spent all her money on doctors. She's broke, but she's still not healed. She's still just as sick. The system has failed her. The government has failed her. The health system has failed her. And religion has failed her, because religion declares this woman to be unclean and has shamed, cut her off, cancelled her, and silenced her. So religion has not been good for this woman. Now, when I was a kid, you could ride a bike without a helmet. Helmets were not compulsory in Australia. But then now, as we know, in Australia, helmets are compulsory. We're one of the only countries in the world to do this. All over the world, people get to ride enjoying the wind in their hair. But no, in Australia, they make us wear helmets. That's how miserable we are with our helmets on. In Australia, we have all these laws imposed upon us and we just do what they tell us. I blame our convict past. We're just too used to doing what authority figures tell us to do. Apparently, Australia, we're the only country in the world where if there's a red sign saying don't walk, we obey it. Even when there are no cars, we stand there too afraid to cross. We obey what authority tells us. Authority comes and takes away our freedom and happiness. And that's what religion does. Religion comes, imposes these arbitrary laws upon us, and takes away our freedom and happiness. This is the criticism of Christopher Hitchens, famous atheist writer, "God is not great, why religion just ruins, poisons everything." And it all goes back to a famous Enlightenment European philosopher called Jean-Jacques Rousseau, who says, "We are born free and happy, but then religion comes and takes away our freedom and happiness." So we need to overthrow religion and we can be free and happy again. So if we believe this, and I think it's a good place to begin, Jesus cannot be good for us. I'm sorry. Jesus takes away our freedom and happiness. So how can we know if Jesus is good? Here I suggest three things from the story. Number one, well, let's backtrack and ask the bigger meta question. Well, what is good in the first place? We all believe in good, but what is good? Let's go back to the story. She came up behind him and touched the edge of his cloak, and immediately her bleeding stopped. "Who touched me?" Jesus asked. When they all denied it, Peter said, "Master, the people are crowding and pressing against you." There's a crowd around you, Jesus. And I think that's a good metaphor here, that there's a crowd here and the crowd is contesting what's right and wrong. Everyone has their version of what's good and bad. When I was in primary school and when we played handball, we played handball with your hand. You hit the ball with your hand. But these days, if you go to primary school, when my boys go to primary school, you're allowed to kick the ball now. What is that? That's not handball. worse, he can even head the ball now. I think, this is not handball. I'm sorry. This is violating the rules of handball. But then again, this is what makes them happy. It's their version of handball. Who am I to impose my version of handball upon them? We all have our version. We all have our rules of handball. But here's the thing. No matter what your version of handball is, there's still a line dividing in and out. And no matter what our version of good and bad, we all have a line that divides good and bad. When I speak in high schools, I ask the students, I say, so what is your definition of good? And they say, whatever makes you happy. You get to decide. So then I ask them, well, I'm married with three kids, so can I then leave my wife and kids, have an affair with a worker and leave everyone because that makes me happy? And they go, oh, you can't do that. And I say, but you said I can do whatever makes me happy. So suddenly I realise, no. We still have a line that transcends whatever makes you happy. So how do we decide where that line is between good and bad? Do I, the individual, get to decide where that line is? No, because now we've seen that just makes you choose selfish decisions. So is it society that decides the line between good and bad? Well, no, because that just means the majority get to choose. When in the history of reform, it's the minority voice that's right about what's good and bad. It also means we can't critique societies for being wrong. We can't say to Japan, hey, please don't wail. They go, no, well, we've chosen this as good, but we say, well, we think it's bad. We can't say to South Africa, apartheid is bad, because their society has chosen it as a good. So it means we can't critique societies. Ooh, okay, so is it the animal kingdom where we get to decide what's good and bad? And here Christians love the penguins. We should all be like the penguins because daddy penguin is so faithful and monogamous and hangs around baby penguin until baby penguin grows up. But I say, why the penguin? Why don't we choose dogs? I've had dogs that are anything but faithful and monogamous. They're serially unfaithful. But some say, well, why not the elephants where there's no hint of consent at all? Then I say, well, why not the black widow spider, right? Where the female eats the male after sex, which says a lot about the male sex drive. Because the man is thinking, you know, this is going to end badly, but I'm still going to give it a go. So now suddenly we realize, well, where can we choose this line between good and bad? So let me come to point two. Why don't we let Jesus define what's good and bad? What if Jesus is our definition of good? Let's go back to the story. In the presence of all the people, she told why she had touched Jesus and how she had been instantly healed. Then Jesus said to her, "Daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace." And the Hebrew word there is shalom, which is the sum of everything that's good in life. Love, justice, mercy. Like, have a full, fulfilled life of love, justice, mercy, peace, shalom. Jesus gives this woman what we think is good. He heals her, restores her, vindicates her, honors her. He gives her what we would want to be good. But why should Jesus be our definition of good? Well, this is what I call the Otto Bin problem, and I've told this to you a few years ago. It's my job once a week to take out the garbage, and then I had to decide, is tonight green bin or yellow bin night? Is it green bin or is it yellow bin night? So what everyone on my street does is we wait to see what someone else does. So one of my neighbours, he put out the green bin. So we all put out the green bin. But that night, it was yellow bin. So we all got it wrong. See, if we just are left to ourselves, we will get it wrong. So who can we call to work out what is good and bad? Jesus says, let me decide what's good and bad. Let me say what is a good choice for an individual. Let me decide what is good in society. Let me decide what is good in the animal kingdom for us to copy. And Jesus gives this woman what we would define as good: shalom, love, peace, justice, mercy. See, we need Jesus to define what is good, because we all here believe in human rights. We all believe in human dignity. We all believe in human equality. But where do we get this from? Like, where does, show me a human right. Show me an atom and molecule of human dignity. And this is Yuval Noah Harari. I quoted him last week. He's a famous Jewish atheist philosopher. He's a writer, a speaker, famous for books like Homo Sapiens, Homo Deus. And he says there is no such thing as a human right. I'm sorry, this is a useful fictional story we've been telling ourselves. It's actually based on emotions and feeling good, but really it's fictional, but it's a useful story. It helps us get along. There's no such thing as a human right. Without a God, there's no such thing as human right, human equality, and human dignity. But Jesus gives us equality and dignity. This is Rebecca McLachlan in her book, The Secular Creed. She says we all believe that racism is wrong. We all believe it's wrong to discriminate upon a person based on the colour of their skin. We all believe that black lives do matter, but why do they matter? They matter because black lives matter to Jesus. It's Jesus that shows us there's human worth, human equality, human dignity, and it's wrong to discriminate against people based on the colour of their skin. Last week I quoted Tom Holland, not Tom Holland the Spider-Man, Tom Holland the UK historian, not a Christian. He says everything that we hold dear and true in our Western civilization, like freedom, equality, consent, compassion, justice, is actually based on the person and teachings of Jesus. So we can let Jesus define what is good and in what we hold to be true and dear. So number three then, what can we say? Jesus is actually also good for us. He doesn't just define what is good, he makes us good. Back to the story. Jesus said, someone touched me. I know that power has come out of me, gone out of me. Then in the presence of all the people, the woman told why she had touched Jesus and how she had been instantly healed. This woman isn't just broken on the outside, she's broken on the inside, and Jesus heals her from the inside out. As an Asian kid, I took piano lessons. Like every Asian kid here, we all took piano lessons. I did to the age of 18, and like every Asian kid here, my parents would have been horrified if I was like, I'm going to be a professional musician. No, you'll be a doctor, a lawyer. So why did you make me learn piano for 18 years? But I learned piano for 18 years, and I'm not musical. I've got nothing to show for it because all I did was play, but I didn't become musical. I needed someone to download music into me to change me from the inside out. And that's exactly what Jesus does. He downloads his music, his spirit into us, and he changes us from the inside out. So this woman's problem wasn't that she was just broken on the outside. She wasn't just oppressed by the authorities. She was broken on the inside because her body carried a disease. And Jesus comes and heals her from the inside out and takes away her disease. And we too, yes, we're oppressed by the external authority figures, but we too are also broken from the inside out. The Bible says we carry sin, shame, hurt, guilt, regret. And Jesus comes and heals us from the inside out. He forgives us. He washes us. He restores us. And he fills us with his spirit. So back to our question then. How do I know if Jesus is good? And we've answered this today by saying, well, how do we believe that anything is good? Well, based on that, that's why we believe Jesus gets to define what is good. But more than that, Jesus makes us good from the inside out. I didn't just do piano lessons. I actually did music for the HSC. So my HSC marks were based on how good I was at music. And I was pretty good at music because I learned all the rules, I learned all the algorithms, I learned all the formulas. So I can tell you that Chopin was a Polish composer from the Romantic period. I can tell you that Andante is Italian for at a walking pace. I can tell you that the key signature says this is in F minor. But you know what? I could never hear the music. I could never play the music. I couldn't feel the music. I was not musical. I learnt the rules, but it never changed me. And it's the same with being good. We can learn the rules. We can follow the crowd, but we will never be good enough for the crowd and will never be good enough for ourselves. But if we let Jesus define what is good, Jesus will change us from the inside out, and we will always be good enough for Jesus, and Jesus will always be good enough for us.
Okay, Sam, do you want to come up for some Q&A? See, we've got some questions here. First of all, how does Christianity, the version of good in Christianity, compare with other religions?
Yeah, so C.S. Lewis has got a great book, Mere Christianity, where he compares the good in Christianity with the good in other religions. And of course, there's a 90% overlap, and that's exactly what you want to know. And as a Christian, I would explain that by saying God shines his goodness on everyone, whether they believe in Jesus or they don't believe in Jesus. And Jesus himself has a saying, God sends rain on everyone, no matter how righteous or unrighteous they are. So no matter where we stand with God or Jesus, God will bless us with his goodness, his justice, his mercy. And because of that, we all have the same concept of good. But where Christianity might be a little bit different, so this is the 10% difference, is, as I mentioned last week, every major religion and religious figure teaches, do to others as they do to you. Jesus was the first one to come up with a golden rule of Christianity, do to others as you want them to do to you. So Jesus takes it one step further. The other thing is, we, as I mentioned here, we all believe in good, we all believe in love, we all believe in justice, we all believe in mercy, we all believe it's better to give than to receive, we all believe sacrifice should trump gain, we all believe those same things. But Jesus is the only religious figure who basically teaches and practices those things. So we even just abstract back, it's only until Jesus that we actually even assume God should be a loving God. Because in Greek mythology, the gods are anything but loving. They're actually quite evil and capricious. They don't like humans. Humans get in their way. In Asian mythology, the gods are quite mischievous. You can't trust them to do good. In fact, that's one of the reasons why the scientific revolution took off in the 1600s, Christianized Europe. They actually assume because God is orderly, we can trust what we see. Whereas in other mythologies, you can't trust what you see, because what if their gods have come in and just mischievously messed up your experiment? Other religions like Islam is very fatalistic, such as the will of Allah. So Allah is not loving. He's powerful, but he's not loving. He actually doesn't care very much about what's happening to you right now. And Eastern religions are very impersonal. So the solution to love, justice, and mercy as well is all an illusion. Enlightenment is actually to distance ourselves from those. So it's only in Christianity where we believe that God, his starting place is that he's loving and personal. So somehow Jesus makes best sense of these things that we hold to be true and dear, that the foundation of love should be, life should be love, giving, justice, and mercy. I'll give another example. David Brooks, New York Times writer from the USA, not a Christian. He wrote a book called Two Mountains, or actually the second mountain. He says the first mountain in life is where we think life is all about gaining success, trophies, validation, success. I said it twice. But the second mountain is where you suddenly realize, oh, life is about giving. It's about sacrifice. The first mountain was trying to fulfill the needs of the ego, gain. But the second mountain is where you suddenly realize, oh, no, life is about serving the needs of the spirit, giving, sacrifice, service. Then he thought, we've all discovered that. We all would agree, yep, that's truth. But why would this be true unless there's a giving, sacrificing, gracious God behind the universe? So somehow programmed into the DNA of the universe and us is grace, the idea that you're meant to give, serve, and sacrifice. So I think Jesus is the ultimate example of a giving, serving, sacrificing God. So that's, I think, the little edge. Yep.
Nice. Okay, next question. The woman in the story lost 4 years. Is that right?
Yeah.
The woman lost years looking for other good things. She lost all this time. But before coming to Jesus, how do we shortcut this for others who are on that same journey, and that so that they don't lose so much time in coming to find the goodness of Jesus?
Yeah, so she lost 12 years. So the Bible says she was bleeding for 12 years. And we got the eyewitness account here from Luke, but another eyewitness account, it goes one step further and says she spent all her money on doctors and still wasn't healed. So she was broke, financially broke. And we may not pick it up in the West, but non-Western cultures reading and realize, and she's also been cut off from society, shunned, shamed, cancelled, silenced. And even in her religion, she'll be seen as dirty and not allowed to come to the temple to worship. So she's been broken in so many different ways. Well, I think for her, the amazing thing was it actually wasn't easy to find Jesus. One, you know, Jesus only just recently came on the scene, but he was always surrounded by that crowd. So she actually had to fight her way through the crowd, risk public shaming to get to Jesus. So I think what the stories of faith in the Bible shows, you know, we actually have to make some effort. Like Zacchaeus has to run ahead of Jesus, climb a tree. Some other people to get healing had to dig a hole through a roof to lower their friend down to see Jesus. This woman has to fight her way through a crowd. So I think the message for us is, on the one hand, Jesus comes to us, but on the other hand, we do have to sort of go out of our way in some sort of costly buy-in, not financially, but, you know, I might have to risk shame. I might have to risk loss to seek and find Jesus.
Thank you. Now the questions kind of turn towards the personal side of knowing and experiencing God's goodness, Jesus' goodness for ourselves. So how do I experience Jesus' goodness in my life?
Yeah, so the big attraction of Jesus is we can have a personal relationship with God. So it's one thing to follow Jesus, it's one thing to worship Jesus, but it's another thing to have a personal, living, loving relationship with Jesus, and that is the attraction. So how can I? So on the one hand, it's like any other relationship. On the other hand, it's not like any other relationship. One, Jesus is the Son of God, but he's also not physical right now. So it's not like we can see him and touch him because he's not here in this room. But on the other hand, like every other relationship, we can talk to Jesus and we can hear Jesus. So the easiest way to hear from Jesus is to read from the Bible, and the easiest way to talk to Jesus is simply to talk to Jesus. As the relationship progresses, bit by bit, we know Jesus more and more, more personally. And I think I said last week, I can't remember whether it was this service or last service, there becomes this efficiency, the more intimate and the more you know each other. So with my wife, when she doesn't like what I wear, she uses words like, don't wear that. But the more and more she knows me, she can simply say, is that what you're wearing? And to you single guys, that sounds like a question, but it's actually a command disguised as a question. It's like, don't wear that. And it can then progress to where she can just look at me and grunt, huh? And then at the end, she can just do an eye roll. And then I realize, oh, she doesn't want me to wear this. And it's the same with Jesus. It begins very concrete and tangible. We read the words in the Bible. We pray to Jesus. But as he fills us with his Spirit, more and more we sense what Jesus is saying and hinting to us. And there's this moment where we're never without Jesus throughout the day.
Nice. And last question then. How do I know if Jesus has changed me from the inside out? I still do bad things. Asking for a friend.
Yeah, that's right. So like with everything, there's what's called binary closed set and there's open set fuzzy. So in Australia, you are an Australian the instant you get your Australian passport. Boom, you know, status, Australian. There's no grey fuzzy thing. When you come in through customs, they say, show me your passport. Yes, you are Australian. They don't ask you questions. They don't ask, do you like Vegemite? Can you sing the national anthem? Do you know the rules to Australian rules football? They don't ask you that. That's not relevant. No, you have the status. But at the same time, do you feel Australian? That's a fuzzy thing. It's like the difference between unripe to ripe. When does it happen? From immature to mature, from feeling un-Australian to Australian. So there's this moment where when do you feel Australian? It's the same with being a Christian. We have the status. You are loved by Jesus, accepted by Jesus, forgiven by Jesus, a child of God. You have the status. It's binary, yes, no, black, white. But then there's this fuzzy thing as we mature and grow from the inside. And on the one hand, we never feel Christian enough, but we never will. And that's our point. It's a journey. It's a maturing process. But on the other hand, when you look back, you go, wow, I have grown a lot. I have matured a lot. Jesus has changed me a lot.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Sam. That's all the questions for today.